Hi, folks. Welcome back to On Call with Insignia, where you go on call with leaders innovating the future of Southeast Asia's internet and digital economy. I'm your host, Paolo Aquino, and welcome back to season 5 of the show. So it's been 5 seasons already, this 112th episode. So definitely a lot of conversations that have transpired since we first started the show, and we're happy to have you guys back tuning in to more conversations with even more leaders who are from different backgrounds, different industries, but are all interested in one way or another in Southeast Asia's, you know, fast emerging industries and markets. And speaking of other leaders, really happy to have two leaders from a familiar company to our longtime listeners, none other than Super, which is a leading social commerce platform focused in tier 2, tier 3 in rural Indonesia. We've had their CEO, Steven, on the show before. We've also had VP of Operations, Jarrett. And now we have another set of leaders from Super to share another layer of the company, share another layer of perspective on company building. So we have with us the head of innovation strategy, Nadira Zahiruddin. And we also have with us the head of business development, Gisela Tuwanda. So Gisela and Nadira, thanks for coming on the show. And thanks for opening up our season 5 of On Call with Insignia with me.
Yeah, thank you, Paolo. Thank you, Insignia team as well, for having us on the podcast. Definitely happy to be here.
Yeah, thank you, Paolo.
Great to have you both. And to introduce you to our listeners, maybe you can share with us how you actually ended up joining Super. I know you guys probably have different experiences of what you first saw or what you first encountered when you joined Super. So maybe you can share a little bit about that. Maybe Gisela first, since she was first to join the company.
Thanks again for having me here. I'm happy to be here. I've heard a lot of good things before I joined Super. So actually, when the opportunity came, I decided to join Super because I believe that Super is one of the companies that not only focus on the company's development, but also the impact that it can give to the society, especially in the rural areas. That's why I finally decided to join Super. And currently at Super, I'm the head of business development, and I'm in charge of growing the cosmetics business through distribution and acquisition as one of the revenue streams for Super. And I actually worked a lot with Nadira in growing the cosmetics private label as well. And so the first thing that came into my mind during my first week at Super was like, wow, the pace here in Super is very insane. I mean, I thought the pace for my previous company was fast enough, but then Super is on another level. It's very fast, but in a good way. I'm still glad to be here because it actually helped me to grow out of my comfort zone, which I believe is the best thing that you could want if you want to grow the most.
So you would say like really the pace is the biggest difference because you used to work in Google, Facebook and Citibank.
Yes, correct. My most recent experience was in Citibank. And usually people in those industries always say that Citibank already have a very fast pace, but then Super is much faster than Citibank. So
yeah, different organization for sure. Correct. Adira, how about you? How did you end up joining Super? How did you find out about the company and what was your first impression like?
Yeah, of course. So at Super, I'm currently the head of innovation strategy, where I build new revenue strategies and optimize margins to strengthen our profitability. But prior to joining Super, I have actually always heard great things about the company since their Series A announcement and have followed their journey since then as well. And one of the reasons why I'm very passionate about this business is because growing up, I was always exposed to the FMCG industry through my family's dairy products business. But since looking at Super's success story in the FMCG and social commerce industry, I know it is just the right company for me to be in, and I wanted to be part of growing Super's mission as well. In terms of my first day or first week, I remember I was immediately thrown into our quarterly OKR meetings with our senior management, and then investor meetings. And to end my first week, there was also an award dinner by Genty and Credit Suisse. So ever since then, the pace has not stopped. And the more I work here, my schedule has become more and more exciting by the week. So as Gisela said, yeah, the pace is on another level for sure.
Must have been quite a unique, I guess, first week with OKRs all of a sudden. And yeah, so I think with those backgrounds and certainly like the theme that you've both shared is definitely fast paced. Maybe you guys can also share with our listeners what those roles entail. I think, Nadira, you can start first because I think you have, I guess, the interesting kind of title, innovation strategy.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, maybe our listeners are wondering what exactly that means within the context of Super, right?
So actually not just cosmetics, but I do cover other categories as well. But my main role at Super is to build new revenue strategies for growth. And since we also want to build a profitable business and make a lasting impact, the team and I help to optimize processes and margins to strengthen our profitability through initiatives such as exclusivity deals and private label. With the current market conditions in the tech space, we look at the learnings from other startups, and we know how crucial it is to prioritize building a path to profitability and also building a sustainable business. Therefore, the key areas of focus right now for us and my team are margin optimization and also creating efficient processes that minimize redundancies.
So in one line, getting to profitability or maintaining
yes,
that profitability,
exactly.
Rather.
So building that playbook to pave the way to profitability.
Awesome. And Gisella, how about you? I mean, business development should be something that a lot of people are already familiar with, but maybe for Super's, you know, mission to build what even calls like the Walmart of Indonesia minus the stores, what does that mean?
Actually, while Mandarin's team focuses on monetizing the existing infrastructure of Super, the team and I focus more on finding new initiatives to boost Super's revenue inorganically, which is done through cosmetics distribution as well as cosmetic private label. And we actually believe that cosmetics shares the most similar DNA with FMCG, which is a super specialty, on top of known to have high margins. That is why we actually decided to do the cosmetics business to actually boost the revenue for our Super.
Yeah, so I think that's pretty interesting insight that you've shared there about cosmetics being sort of the vertical that makes the most sense after, you know, Super had already built it. Sort of position with FMCG. So maybe since Nadira focuses on the monetization, and then Gisella, you focused on, you know, finding out what are these new opportunities to then monetize, going back to Nadira. Maybe you can share a little bit more about how that private label business has, you know, has grown or evolved within the context of your role.
So when I first started, private label, I think was in pipeline, but we didn't start with cosmetics. So for private label, at first we were focusing on the FMCG products, but then we started to tap into the cosmetics industry, basically for both private label and distributions. Before I mentioned that we believe and we have faith in the cosmetics industry, right? So this is actually based on three reasons. First is that the cosmetics industry has grown quite significantly in the last few years. In fact, the revenue for cosmetics market is amounting up to $7.4 billion in 2022. And then they're also known for having high margin, right? Usually it's double-digit margins for cosmetics. And then the third thing is that in Indonesia, we've seen a particular pattern in smaller areas where things need to be trending or viral in the bigger cities before it actually entering smaller cities. With this, we believe that the demand for cosmetics products will grow even more in the rural areas this year and the following years. And also the last thing that I would like to point out is that similar to FMCG, there is predictability in the cosmetics business. We basically can predict when the products will run out and when the customers will usually repurchase. Whereas in other industries, let's say for fashion industries, it's will be much harder because we cannot really predict or know when the clothes will expire or run out. Because clothes don't have any expiry date or it cannot run out, right? So right. That's another thing that makes us believe why cosmetics is a great idea for us to start. As of now, we've actually been working quite intensely. We've also been talking to some potential local brands regarding this opportunity with Super.
Thanks for bringing us through that thought process and really shows the different considerations that need to be made when thinking about entering a new vertical. So maybe Nadira, you can take on from that to talk about more of the monetization, or maybe even from a consumer perspective, right? Because I think it's pretty obvious why FMCG would be needed by tier two, tier three rural Indonesia. But when it comes to cosmetic, where is the spending there? Where is, you know, what is the behavior when it comes to buying cosmetics in those areas?
So maybe from my end, I would also like to highlight that at the moment, we're focusing on three categories for private label. So one is we are focusing on Sembako products. So far, we've already launched our two rice brands. Sembako, main reason is because they're number one GMV contributor to Super. It is a main necessity and we see constant demand consumption for these types of products as well. But we also have F&B. So we have launched our crispy macaroni snack in November. And this is also one of the top GMV contributors to Super. And we also see that the margins are pretty high and can go up to double digit. Hence why we have actually balanced up from Sembako and FMB to kind of boost it from both GMV and the gross margin side. So other than health and beauty, which is pretty much straightforward why we have done, you know, health and beauty, since they are known to have high margins. So we are also focusing on Sembako and FMB. But in terms of my role in the private label, since I have been exposed to the FMCG industry, I help to leverage existing connections and network for suppliers, vendors, negotiating the best margins when we can. I also leverage the knowledge that I have in FMCG on, you know, choosing the right types of products and using the best practices to build and grow a product for our private label. So meaning setting up OKRs and targets, the right North Stars that we need to focus on for each quarter to really achieve our goals for our private label and building, you know, the number one product in each category, right? But so far, I mean, private label, since I have already joined, it's grown to like contribute 2% to our monthly GMV. So after this, it's just growing our existing private label. And we also already have a few more private label brands that are in the pipeline, which are also in line with our goals for both, you know, the profitability and also revenue generating businesses.
And just to add a little more detail to that, so the private label, you guys, I guess, make these brands from scratch, or like what percentage of it is, you know, sort of from scratch, and what percentage is, you know, looking out for some of these smaller brands, which I think you even mentioned in a previous panel, like looking out for some of these, what he calls underdog kind of businesses, helping them out.
So we have two approaches to build Super's private label brands. One is what we call organic, where we actually develop the products and brands from scratch. And then the other approach is called inorganic, where we actually acquire existing brands in the market that have already achieved BMF. So far, the three brands that I mentioned, the two rice brands and also the macaroni sack, are all organic. So far, we have only been, you know, developing our brands organically, but we have recently started to look for, you know, existing brands in the market that are doing well. And, you know, if everything goes well, then we'll be acquiring them for majority of ownership, essentially.
Okay, great. I think that's really interesting and should be exciting to see, like, what brands you guys are able to bring into your portfolio. Maybe you can share with the listeners, right? Like, if you were to give a class to them on launching white label brands, like, what would be the key takeaways you'd like them to have? Or maybe even some misconceptions that you want to break when it comes to launching these kinds of brands.
I will be sharing the key takeaways, and Nadia will share the misconceptions. So for the key takeaways, there are three main points that I would like to share. First is that we need to understand the market that we are serving. I mean, it will always be better to focus on smaller areas and markets and really understand the playbook that works there, rather than starting in many areas but don't have deep understanding of the market that we're serving. And then second is choosing the right SKUs or categories, including doing experimentations and sales testing. Last is establishing a strong brand awareness and trust.
Yeah, so there are a couple of misconceptions to break for private label as well, which are quite interesting. First one is how specific taste is in different regions. So usually what we see is that every area or even every district might have different taste or different interests, right? Another one is that, I mean, something that is appealing to one area might not be appealing to another area. And as simple as also something that is appealing to me might be a really big potential in other areas, especially rural. And another one is that the misconception that rural areas have minimum to no potential. So we might need more effort in penetrating rural areas, but once we are in, the potential there is humongous. And I mean, they have many needs, but limited access or limited infrastructure compared to tier one cities.
So I actually wanted to ask if you had any example to share with regards to, especially since Gisela talked about, you know, having to really break down things into small areas and really understand the market that you are in, which is not just like rural Indonesia isn't just one big sort of monolithic thing, right? Like there's lots of different considerations depending on geography. And then Nadia, you also emphasized that by talking about different preferences across different areas. Maybe you guys have an example with regards to one of the brands that you guys already launched when it comes to that.
Probably I can start. So for example, maybe we're talking about like, since Super is mainly in rural areas, I'm mm-hmm. gonna mainly focus on the difference between the bigger cities and the smaller cities, right? So in major cities, people will expect like instant deliveries, right? But instead mm-hmm. in rural areas, they don't really focus on the amount of the time the delivery needs. So let's say next day delivery is also okay. That might be one of the example, like the difference between rural and major cities, which actually plays a huge role for us to actually creating strategies to penetrate the rural areas. We need to really understand what the market wants and what the market needs in that area, instead of just like basically copying whatever works in the major cities.
Right, right. So you guys wouldn't want to optimize as much for that speed of delivery, but are there also differences within, say like within the group of like tier two, tier three rural cities that you guys serve? Are there like, what are some of the interesting differences across those cities?
I guess some of the, maybe like in terms of some that I've seen, and not just like the categories that we focus on in private label, but for example, one area in the west part of like East Java tend to purchase more products that are maybe like more sweet or maybe like in terms of flavor, they like the ones that are like more sweet flavors, maybe for ready to drink brands. Whereas, you know, on other parts in East Java, they maybe favor, you know, other products that are more like neutral or like original flavor kind of products. But it really is about experimenting, right? So what we do at Super is we also do a lot of like either like testing or experimentations for different kind of products. So this is something that we do continuously before we actually decide on which brand that we want to focus on or which type of SKUs that we want to focus on, right? Because again, since every area has different preferences, so what we do is we usually experiment in a smaller scale first with maybe like second tier brands. And then once we do see which are the winning products and really see which products have really big potential, then we focus on those type of products from the experimentation results.
So like how much customization do you guys have to account for when it comes to these like products, especially white label? Or is it something that's not really something that you guys think about? For example, like say like one area, you know, tends to buy more spicy stuff, right? Than another area. Like for example, for a crispy macaroni, will you have like a spicy version like sell to that area, and will you just have like a regular one distributed to another area? Like, do you think about this? Is that a huge consideration on your part, or are you just trying to focus more on SKUs that maybe wouldn't require that kind of, you know, that kind of nuance?
I would say, since I cover both also exclusivity and private label, right? So, you know, the first thing that comes to my mind is the exclusivity deals. So what we do for exclusivity is actually trying to secure exclusive deals for different areas. So for example, for a certain city like Probolinggo, for example, we become like the sole distributor for a type of product. So for that, definitely is a very, I mean, it's a huge consideration, right? Like for that specific area, what are the kind of products that they usually do? I mean, that they usually use or purchase. And what we do with exclusivity, same with private label, is that we typically run like a couple of weeks of like trial run where we see, you know, what is the demand in that area for that type of product. And then, you know, if it makes sense, then we approach them for the exclusive deals. But same for private label, I think in terms of private label, maybe less consideration, but I mean, I would say it's still a big consideration, but less than like exclusivity, because private label, then you are serving to like the whole of East Java, right? Yeah. And for example, something like rice is something that is quite general. That everyone, you know, like consumes rice, and Indonesia is like such a big consumer of rice, if you may know. Hence why it's also one of like the top categories on Super. And hence also why we have focused on rice first and foremost before other categories.
Right, right. Yeah, no, I think like my takeaway here, at least from this conversation thus far, is that it's really hard to just simplify things. Like there's really different kinds of
There's definitely a lot of like complexity to like rolling out in rural areas. But I mean, even like infrastructure wise or logistics wise, it's like might be different on in each area as well, right? Yeah. There is like definitely a lot of things to consider.
Just to add what Nadia just said, I'm on the same page with her, where I believe that knowing, let's say, something that might be interesting or something that this area might like might be different with the other areas, and it's actually important to really able to understand what they want. So at Super, we also have been doing a white space analysis, actually, where we're able to analyze like the data in the specific areas to actually understand what these areas might really like compared to the other areas. So we try to make a customization for specific areas, especially for the private label, to ensure that when we launch private label products, we really know which area they target and that the product launch is actually really matched with the market needs for that specific areas.
In other words, like product market fit, essentially. Yeah.
Correct.
But it's really nice. I mean, we always throw the word product market fit around, especially in the startup space, but it's nice to hear it from a really concrete sort of example through how you guys do things at Super. Maybe just zooming out a little bit, like how would you consider, you know, measuring impact when it comes to these roles that you have and the work that you guys are doing? I know we got a little bit into the details, but maybe zooming out into the big picture, like How would you say that you've achieved success in your roles, especially when it comes to this white label business? Nadira?
So if we talk about impact from a business standpoint, we measure this by executing strategies that add value to both our top and bottom lines, especially since we are focusing on strengthening our profitability through the initiatives that we've already mentioned. And we also do this by, again, setting OKRs and North Stars, to ensure the team is working towards the same North Star and focus on achieving important goals. However, building our white label business is more than just the business metrics itself, but how do we actually add value to the rural population? For example, by creating a local product that is cheaper than national brand counterparts with same or better quality, or a product that becomes, their main necessity and one that they cannot live without, right? And moreover, how these products can enhance Super's platform value and make them like more attached to our platform, which is ultimately our goal to create a platform that, cannot be replaced.
Yeah, I really like what you mentioned about providing more choice, more options for consumers, especially in these areas. How about you, Gisela? How would you consider success, or how would you measure impact when it comes to your role?
Yeah, probably I'll just start by like adding more things to what Riri just said, because I think basically what she said sums up everything. But just to add a bit on that is that relationship is also another thing that we really focus on. It can be relationship with vendors or either the brand founders that we're going for the private label, or even the agents, customers. Because by having a great relationship, we could have a better understanding of what each other needs, right? And by understanding each other needs, we can ensure that the value we're giving, whether it is the private label products that we're launching or even the platform that we build, will be tailored to their needs.
Yeah, and so like speaking of learnings and how you guys have grown in your roles, one thing that I like to ask a lot of our guests here on the show is things that they have had to let go when it comes to their roles as leaders. So maybe for you guys, like, what are some of the things that you've had to unlearn as leaders since you joined Super? And especially since you guys also manage teams, right? And also manage people. Gisela?
Yeah, sure. So there's three things that I would like to share that is actually the things that I have to unlearn. The first thing is that people actually make decisions driven by emotions. Most people, or many people, actually make decisions by a few seemingly trivial and non-technical factors. For example, many people will prefer products with better packaging but slightly less quality than products with bad packaging but slightly better quality. That's how like emotions actually the main factor that makes the decisions. And also the second one is the importance of a good storytelling, because good storytelling is exciting, it's captivating, and it makes you fall in love with the main characters, right? Data like numbers, like graphs and charts, those are also important, but what draws people the most is actually the emotional attachment that you can create. So a good storytelling is very important when you're actually running or doing any businesses. And last is slowing down to speed up. I think back in university, we always think that being more productive, meaning that we can do everything at a shorter period of time, right? But throughout the years, I realized that it will be better to focus on fewer things and master those things rather than doing everything, but only have a surface level understanding of it.
A lot of great tidbits there. Thanks, Gisela. How about you, Nadira?
I mean, prior to Super, I started my career at BCG, and then I moved in to join a Series A startup as the head of BD. But there are three things that I also had to learn or kind of like adjust to moving from consulting to early stage and then growth stage at Super. But the first one is, since all my previous experiences in management consulting, as well as my previous startup TAPS customers in tier one cities, we often overlook the underserved population as an opportunity and, have realized that the potential there is actually immense. And then second one, serving tier two, tier three, and especially having this kind of underdog mindset that, our CEO Steven also always mentions, and also humble values in the company. It really means embodying, humility in everything you do, especially, like going to the grounds and really executing the ops side of it really like brings humility in, everything that you do. And then last one, especially moving from consulting to tech, maybe not every project have to have a clear direction, scope, and structure. In startup, especially in a big tech like Super, it could be very chaotic and also overwhelming. And you just have to kind of like adapt to this kind of work environment.
I think some counterintuitive stuff from both of you, what Gisela said, sharing about the going slow to go fast, and Nadira talking about like, maybe too much structure may be a bad thing if you want to sort of be able to be adaptable, right? On that note, I want to move into a new corner, actually, that we're starting for season 5, which is this more like technical kind of sharings corner, where we wanted to maybe dive a little bit deeper into certain concepts that, you know, perhaps our listeners would be familiar with, like building their own startups, and maybe contextualize that with the business that you guys are working on. So for Gisella, you know, we talk a lot about PMF, and you've certainly described a lot of sort of the thinking, like a lot of the market research that you guys have done in order to figure out what products are best to distribute to different areas. So is there a difference between achieving PMF in rural Indonesia versus other market segments? If there is, what is it?
So actually, when we started building Super, we actually thought of building it for the end consumers, assuming that they will understand the benefit of e-commerce, right, for the rural areas. But after learning from our research and also our experience, we actually have to change the way we build products and who we build it for. So instead, we are building the products for the community leaders instead of directly for the end consumers in the rural area. And we empower these community leaders with technological tools, which enable them to learn how to sell FFCG products to their communities. Not only it helps to improve the accessibility and the inequality of the FMCG products, but it also allows them to support their family and put food on their table, especially for those in the rural areas. And when we build products for these agents, we also think about how we can maximize their output, which is their commissions, with limited constraints, which is their time. So in a sense, we need to prioritize the agent's productivity as we build the product for them. And we hope that by providing these tools to our agents, we can help them improve the quality of life for them and also for their communities. And also, I mentioned before that the needs and the wants in the major cities and rural areas are very different. So we really need to be able to empathize with the user's perspectives and tackle for that what they need and what they want, instead of assuming everything is the same with major cities.
I think it's pretty interesting. Like, I guess people will assume social commerce, therefore PMF is, and sales and consumer sales, all of that, optimizing for that. But then you talked about really thinking about the agents. So yeah, that's an interesting point. And for Nadira, do you have any sort of go-to framework or sort of mental model that you use when to, you know, when it comes to executing on, you know, sort of monetization or innovation strategies in the context of retail, which can be very commoditized, and in the context of rural Indonesia, where the consumer preferences may not be super differentiated, right? They just want whatever's cheapest, I guess, or, you know.
So executing new strategies in rural areas, definitely very different. Maybe three things that I'd like to highlight. First one is, again, always look at the market that you are serving for each initiative and continuously experiment for the best strategy to roll out. So for us, we always do experiments on a smaller scale, as I've mentioned as well, to really see which ones have the great potential. And then we then roll out on a larger scale for the ones that do work out, right? But another thing that I also like to add on this point is that in rural, we also cannot introduce too much tech upfront as well. I mean, it creates an intimidating environment for some of the people there. So with tech-related strategies, we always see how we can simplify the journey and also leverage social capital to build awareness with the consumers there. So, I mean, for example, if one of them sees their friends do it or their family members use it, then it's something that then they would kind of like follow as well. But onto the second point, also want to highlight that you should be resourceful and leverage existing resources when you can. New strategies in rural can be quite capital intensive, especially if you are expanding to new areas. But think about, you know, leveraging existing infrastructure, internal data that you have for each market. So like what Gisella mentioned, the white space analysis, something that we leverage a lot for, you know, any kind of like new strategies. But other than that, also like team members or any other resources to kind of start up new initiatives. So that's also to become like way more efficient in rolling out a new strategy. And last one is, of course, always think about the impact. I think for me, innovation is not just merely inventing something new or a great product, but it is creating something innovative that is impactful to society, especially serving millions in the tier 2 and tier 3 cities. So how do we impact their lives before and post executing the new strategy, which is very much aligned with, you know, Super's mission and values.
Great though to end our quarter on, and thanks for sharing all of that advice and also learnings that you've taken from, you know, really growing the different brands and the business of Super. Now let's move on to a familiar corner, which is the rapid fire round. So a little less heavy than our previous questions and conversation. No need to take as much time to explain your answers. Just fire them away, short and sweet. So first is, what for you are the top three traits of a super leader, Nadira?
Humility, positivity, simplicity, which are part of Super's company core values.
Gisela, how about you?
Actually say humility, positivity, and simplicity.
What is one thing in a word or a line that you have learned from each other since you guys work very closely with each other, right? Gisela?
It's the importance of agility at work because it is very necessary, especially in the startup where sometimes changes is inevitable.
Nadira?
Gisela has taught me how to navigate the complexities within the social commerce and FMCG industry.
Next question. What digital technology or innovation excites you the most today? Doesn't have to be related to Super at all or what you guys do. Nadira?
Yeah, a satellite-based internet that could give accessibility to online services, especially in emerging areas across Indonesia.
This is like
Starlink.
Right.
No, not yet.
Micro-satellite. Okay. Gisela, how about you?
Not yet.
ChatGPT.
Definitely something pretty interesting for me as a content creator. Looking back now, what is a skill, right? Soft skill or hard skill you believe you should have learned back in your time as a student, Gisela?
Probably for soft skill, it's how to face failure. And then for hard skill, more practical project as a student that gives exposure to real life working experience instead of just learning all the theories about it.
How about you, Nadira?
Yeah, for me, more hands-on and larger scale case studies of creating structure out of chaotic business operations that have a lot of like complex moving parts.
Definitely applies to Super as you've learned throughout this conversation. If there's something that you could automate in your job just by wishing for it, like what aspect of your role would that be, Gisela?
Probably scheduling meetings, because sometimes it's really a headache to schedule everyone's time.
Right. Have your own sort of automated EA. Nadira, yeah. How about you?
Maybe making PowerPoint slides for weekly updates. Or just any PowerPoint slides.
Right. Maybe ChatGPT, that might be the next, you know, evolution of ChatGPT.
Honestly, making PowerPoint slides. Yeah. I wish, hopefully.
Right. Next question. What's your favorite go-to destination in Southeast Asia? Or is there any trip that you're most looking forward to taking in the region soon, Nadira?
For me, not just one like specific destination, since I love exploring other beautiful parts of Indonesia, such as Labuan Bajo, but most looking forward to visiting Sumba.
Gisela?
Bali.
Is it somewhere that you regularly go to take a break or?
I just love Bali. Like I've been there a few times this year, but if I can go back, I would still go back to Bali. Like I just love everything about it, like the vibe, the culture, like everything. Right.
A lot of our podcast guests would agree with you. Like Bali is a popular answer.
Yeah.
What's your favorite activity to de-stress, Nadira?
A good meal, puzzles, and binge watching.
What's the last thing that you binge watched?
I feel like I just watched a series, but I forgot what it is. But probably Knives Out.
Oh, okay. Knives Out. They also had that sequel, right? Yeah, Glass Onion. Gisela, how about your favorite activity to de-stress?
TV series or movies, good food, and also hanging out with friends or family.
Finally, anything that you've read or taken up recently that you'd like to recommend to our guests? Like any, it could be a book, or if you haven't read a book in a while, anything, any resource that you've come across that you'd like to recommend to our audience, or something cool that's useful. Gisela?
It's probably going to be 0 to 1 by Peter Thiel, because I think it's better to have a unique value proposition that no one else than just to copy what it is there, which basically what the book is all about, right? And I think this is what Super basically does also, because we're adapting the business model of Pretty Global, but we're adjusting it to the Indonesian market.
Definitely sums up a lot of what we've discussed today. Nadira, how about you?
Malcolm Gladwell's David versus Goliath. So applicable to building Super's business as well. We strive to become the best by serving the markets that are often overlooked by bigger players in the industry.
And I think a metaphor that even Steven would like to use a lot when talking about Super.
Yeah.
So yeah, on that note, thank you so much, Nadira and Gisela, for coming on the show. Definitely covered a lot of ground, went into a lot of detail, and also very useful advice and learnings, even for folks who are not really in the same space that you guys are in. Like, I think just the concept of, you know, trying to find PMF in rural Indonesia, trying to think about product launches, going into new verticals, which apply to a lot of businesses, I think should be very useful for our listeners. So thank you for coming on and sharing that with us. And if you guys want to join Super, they are very much hiring. We'll leave the link in the podcast description in case you are interested in learning more about their open roles. And also links to our past conversations with Steven and Garrett in case you want to learn more about the company. In the meantime, thank you once again, Adir and Gisela, and stay tuned for our next episode. Bye, guys.
Thank you all. Thank you. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you, Paolo, for having us.
Thank you guys for listening, and thanks, Insignia, for inviting us.